This is work that was done in collaboration with Gary Horowitz, Miao Li, and Bachi Sahakian at University of Chicago. It was spurred by an observation of Banks, Fischler, Klebanov, and Susskind, and important further work was done by Liu and Seitland and many other people who I don't have time or space to mention. The plan is that we will discuss phase transition, certain set of phase transitions in Yang-Mills theory and their counterparts in supergravity. And I apologize for the fact that there seems to be some kind of mismatch between the left side and the right side of the focal length of this apparatus. Then we'll go on to discuss a particular phase of the Yang-Mills theory, one where the zero modes are excited only, and look at the mean field theory dynamics of motion on the moduli space of the gauge theory and its relation to black hole thermodynamics. We'll see that that mean field theory is capable of reproducing a remarkable amount of the scaling laws that we know of in black hole thermodynamics, although, of course, since we're doing mean field theory and not precise analysis, we won't get the one-quarter in the entropy formula. And then, just to check that we're doing things correctly, we'll discuss what happens if we take matrix theory to the matrix string theory limit and reproduce the correspondence principle of Horowitz and Polchinski, if there's time. So let me start with a brief summary of matrix theory, proposal by Banks, Fischler, Schenker, and Susskind, that the low energy dynamics of a large number of DP brains on the dual torus of a supergravity compactification reproduces the dynamics of that supergravity in the infinite momentum frame. The appropriate kinematic regime is to take the string coupling, the size of the torus, the energy scale to zero, n to infinity with certain ratios held fixed. The 11th dimension comes out of the string theory as the hidden circle of the reduction from M theory to 2A as the coupling constant of string theory. And the system carries a longitudinal momentum, which is just n units on some appropriate normalization. So the generic object in supergravity, some energy scale, is a black hole. And we'd like to describe it as some kind of metastable bound state of these DP brains. And for lack of a better terminology, we'll call that a D star. It's a sort of the string theory analog of a neutron star. And so in this limit, what we're doing by taking the string coupling to zero and the size scale of the torus to zero is to freeze all the stringing excitations, leaving just the Yang-Mills theory on the brains. And so our expectation is that if this math is working out correctly, the generic state, say a thermal state in the Yang-Mills theory, is in some sense describing the generic state in supergravity, a black hole. Well, there's a problem, and the problem is that we've got supergravity. We're trying to discuss supergravity in the infinite momentum frame, but where the longitudinal direction is compactified, and so if we're describing a black hole, we're describing it sort of boosted in that compact direction, and the typical black hole will be much larger than that compactification scale, especially if we're looking in perturbative two-way string theory. Furthermore, if we think about the entropy of black holes, typically that's going to be much larger than the available number of states in a Yang-Mills theory at some given value of the coupling n energy and box size. And so what do we do? Well, a proposal to these two problems was put forth by, a proposed solution to these two problems was put forth by Banks, Fischler, Klebanov, and Susskind, namely, for sufficient boost, in quotation marks, Lorentz contraction will shrink the black hole longitudinally into some size small enough to fit in the longitudinal box. all one needs to do is to boost it in such a way that the rapidity or the Lorentz contraction factor is such that the Lorentz contracted Schwarzschild radius is smaller than the longitudinal box size. That leads to a condition that the entropy over n times is that the entropy of the black hole is smaller than the n of the longitudinal boost. And that automatically solves the second problem, because if we have n degrees of freedom in the Yang-Mills theory, then we certainly have enough degrees of freedom to describe the entropy of the black hole. Well, in fact, what's happening if we consider these two regimes where n is much smaller than the entropy of the black hole, or n is much larger than the entropy of the black hole, there's a nice compatibility of the picture of what's going on in Yang-Mills theory with the picture of what's going on in supergravity, namely that for n much less than the entropy, then what one has is a gas of supergluons in the Yang-Mills theory on the dual torus. And in the matrix theory dictionary, those supergluons are just longitudinally wrapped membranes in 11-dimensional supergravity. And so we have a state which is extended in the longitudinal direction. And that's what we expect if we have a black hole which is bigger than the box we're trying to put it in. It basically just spreads out and becomes wrapped over that direction. On the other hand, if the entropy is much smaller than the boost, then what's happening in the Yang-Mills theory is that the thermal wavelength of these supergluons becomes much larger than the box that we've put the Yang-Mills theory in, and so this theory, the system freezes into the quantum mechanics of its zero modes. And in the matrix theory dictionary, those zero modes are point-like longitudinal gravitons. Supergravitons in, moving in the 11th dimension. Okay. On the other hand, in supergravity, what's happening is that if we give the black hole a sufficient boost, the momentum stress causes the metric geometry to back react in such a way that the longitudinal box size, proper size, expands near the source. And so what we do is we create a little bubble of 11-dimensional world in a space which is asymptotically 10-dimensional. Okay. And so although I will continue to draw in the future this sort of naive special relativistic Lorentz contraction picture, one should keep in mind that in fact what's going on in general relativity is that at large n, the theory is really becoming 11-dimensional in the vicinity of the object we're describing. Now, no talk would be complete without some mention of anti-de Sitter space. So let me just mention that the same entropic argument that tells you that the longitudinally wrapped black string is favorable for small boost, and the black hole is favorable for large boost. Basically, the favored object is the one with larger entropy in the appropriate regime. The same thing happens in anti-de Sitter 5 times S5 and the various other examples. Witten persuasively argued that the thermal phase of the Yang-Mills theory for sufficiently large temperature, that is temperature that's bigger than the characteristic size of the anti-de Sitter space, is an anti-de Sitter Schwarzschild black hole in five dimensions, and that's an object which is constant along the S5. Therefore, we can think of it as a black five brain wrapping the S5 in some sense. And as we try to extend the theory, take the Yang-Mills theory and push it, or if you like, analytically continue this deconfined phase to low temperatures, we encounter the point where the Schwarzschild radius is of order the size of the phi sphere, and if we just analytically continue that phase, what we'll find is that the black hole is unstable to a localization transition, if you like, along the S5, and so we should be a little careful when we think about the strong coupling limit of Yang-Mills theory. because what happens is there opens up a window when the Yang-Mills coupling is much bigger than one, where there are a set of metastable states, which because of the n-squared here are essentially semi-classical configurations of the master field that are describing 10-dimensional Schwarzschild black holes in 3 plus 1-dimensional Yang-Mills theory. So just a cautionary tale that strong coupling gauge theory may have some surprises in it. All right, so end of the aside, let's go back to the quantum mechanics of the zero modes that we argued was the description of the localized black hole in 11 dimensions. So let's fix a super selection sector, a particular large value of the momentum in the 11th direction. The ground state in that super selection sector, something with whose infinite momentum frame energy is zero, is the graviton of that momentum. And it's described in matrix theory as a threshold bound state of the n d particles. And roughly, one can think of the eigenvalues of the super Yang-Mills matrices as the position coordinates for the d particles. So this state has a highly coherent wave function. Basically, all of the motions of all the d particles have to be finely tuned so that we're exactly at zero energy. So we balance it, their kinetic motion against some attractive matrix interaction. And we expect that if we perturb that state by adding a little energy, or if you like, turning on a temperature, some of that coherence is lost. So we'll make what I think are kind of a minimal set of assumptions about what the dynamics is going to do. Well, it's in general some complicated interacting matrix quantum mechanics, which we don't know how to treat. And so our first attempt to figure out what's going on with some large statistical system is to do mean field theory. So what we will do is to assume that as the system disorders, as we turn on this energy or temperature, it maintains coherence over clusters of these d particles of some size k. And we'll try to determine k by self-consistency. So k equals n for the threshold bound state, k equals 1 at this transition between black holes and black strings, n equals s. Second hypothesis is that we will indeed do mean field theory and that that's a kind of a reasonable guide to what's going on. Hypothesis number 3 is that we can use the known and expected effective interactions of matrix theory up to and perhaps just slightly beyond their limit of validity. And so let's see where that gets us. So let's let n over k, k was the number of d0 brains in a cluster, so the number of clusters s is n over k. Suppose the center of mass has a wave function which has a spread r0 in the transverse directions. Then the uncertainty principle says the spread in the momentum is at least 1 over r0. And so we can estimate the kinetic energy by just taking the number of clusters times the center of mass kinetic energy of each cluster. And that comes out to be S over R0 squared divided by the longitudinal momentum. The simplest interaction of this collection of clusters is the instantaneous Coulomb interaction of zero longitudinal momentum exchange that comes from doing one loop integrals in matrix theory. But since all of these clusters are on top of each other inside this bound state wave function of size R0, we really should incorporate longitudinal momentum exchange processes. And here one might just throw up one's hands in disgust because that's a terrible thing to consider in matrix theory. But we will just, if you like, apply a little bit of a specialization of our third hypothesis that if we believe that matrix theory at the end of the day is going to be Lorentz covariant, then we should be able to use the extension of this instantaneous interaction to non-zero longitudinal momentum exchange. So let's just take the static Coulomb interaction in one higher dimension, Fourier transform it over a periodic circle. And one finds that up to momentum scale in that longitudinal direction of order 1 over the size of this separation, the interaction is essentially constant, and then it's very rapidly falling beyond that. So we will just say that in the boosted frame, longitudinal momentum exchange processes have roughly the same magnitude as this instantaneous interaction up to the scale of longitudinal resolution of the set of clusters in the bound state. So our picture is that we have this, again, using our this kind of crude special relativity intuition, this kind of squashed pancake of partons in the longitudinal direction having a transverse size R naught, and the potential energy is the Newton constant that comes out of the one-loop integral, and then essentially the static Coulomb interaction over the transverse separation summed over the clusters, summed over longitudinal momentum exchange, because all of the exchange processes have roughly the same value. And so that, when you do it, gives you an estimate that the potential energy is the kinetic energy times the factor of Newton's constant times the entropy over R naught to the d minus 2. The virial theorem then tells you that if we equate the potential and kinetic energies, that the entropy, the number of clusters, is Newton's constant times the area of the cluster. And so that's the Bekenstein-Hawking formula, at least in terms of its scaling properties. And indeed, if we also look at the energy of the state, we find that it's the mass is the entropy over the size, and that it is also the correct scaling relation for Schwarzschild black holes. So the punchline is that a rather naive treatment of this matrix description seems to reproduce the generic properties of Schwarzschild black holes. I should say that these interactions are really a cartoon of what's going on. If one goes on beyond this one loop interaction and looks at all the higher loop interactions, they're all of the same order. And so what's happening is that the loop expansion of the matrix theory is breaking down. And that's just an indication that the theory is really becoming non-abelian, that the off-diagonal matrix elements that we're trying to integrate out are just as light and excited as the degrees of freedom that we're looking at. Nevertheless, we should expect that mean field theory is at least a predictor of the scale at which this breakdown is taking place, and we're basically just trying to estimate the properties at that scale of breakdown. A somewhat more refined analysis, taking into account the kinds of higher order terms that come into the Born-Infeld action, was done by Liu and Seitlin, and basically doesn't modify this sort of very crude analysis to any significant extent. Second point is that in order to claim that the number of clusters is the black hole entropy, we have to treat these clusters as distinguishable objects. They're not Bose particles in any sense. Otherwise, we would, of course, get a much smaller entropy because we'd have to divide by S factorial. So that's implied by this first remark, that the clusters are interacting with this diffuse background of non-abelian modes. And since each little piece of the matrix interacts with a different set of off-diagonal modes, we indeed can distinguish them by the different excitations that they're interacting with. Let me just briefly mention that one can go on to consider charged black holes. One can give the clusters a net momentum in the internal torus that we've wrapped supergravity on. That introduces a charge in the theory as far as the observer in the non-compact dimensions is concerned. And in supergravity, this leads to a slight modification of mass, charge, and entropy, where one introduces a kind of a hyperbolic angle to parameterize the charge. Characterizing that in the Yang-Mills theory, as I mentioned, by giving the d particles a net velocity along the internal torus, proceeding along the same lines that I just outlined, one indeed reproduces these qualitative scaling relationships. And in all cases that we've studied, the virial temperature of the clusters, that is their kinetic momentum in the non-compact dimensions, is always the Hawking temperature. So one might say that if we allow a cluster to leak off of this star, the characteristic momentum that it comes out with is the virial temperature that it has inside the star. And so we might say that Hawking radiation in this description is kind of the solar wind of matrix D particles from the D star. Okay. Something that I'll probably then just flash is that if we look at the dynamics of probes, that is, we take our set of clusters describing the black hole and we allow them to interact with another isolated D particle some larger distance away, then there are a large number of terms in the Born-Infeld effective action that that probe should feel. And if we look at large R, small velocity, and the leading terms in the asymptotic metric that's supposed to be seen by that probe, we again, if we make this assumption that the probe is seeing just the effective center of mass motion of the clusters and using these leading order matrix interactions, there are a large number of terms that have to be reproduced. They're all reproduced in the same qualitative fashion. Even some relative coefficients can be made to match if one makes certain assumptions about the radial wave function of the of the clusters. The last thing I'd like to mention is a little bit of further support for this picture that what's really happening is that there's some coherent clusters of D particles inside this D star making up a black hole, and that is to consider a kind of an asymmetric limit of the torus that we're compactifying supergravity on in such a way that one of the transverse directions in fact becomes the appropriate circle to think of as the M-theory circle compactifying to the 2A string theory. This limit was studied by a number of groups, DVV, Banks and Seiberg, Model. Don't have time to list them all. The upshot is that if one takes P plus one dimensional super Yang-Mills theory on this dual torus and carries out this reduction, one ends up with one plus one dimensional super Yang-Mills theory. Basically because as we shrink a circle of 11 dimensional supergravity, it really is terrible, isn't it? As we shrink a circle of 11-dimensional supergravity, the corresponding dual circle gets very large, and so the theory is effectively 1 plus 1 dimensional. So the dominant configurations, then, are ones where if we take the 1 plus 1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory and we look at it at a fixed position along the one circle, then there are sort of n points where correspond to the nd particles, where we see an eigenvalue, if you like, of the Yang-Mills matrix, and they trace out some kind of discretized string in the remaining transverse embedding space. At the correspondence point discussed by Horowitz and Polchinski, where the radius of the bound state that we're looking at is of order the string scale, then again another one of these phase transition occurs, where for bound state size which is larger than the string scale, one has a black hole, and for bound state size which is smaller than the string scale, one has a fundamental string. And at the transition, again, the entropy of the black hole matches the entropy of the string. So the entropy of the string is just the square root of the oscillator level. Okay. So let's now go to the, if you like, double correspondence point where the black hole is of string scale, and we're working in this infinite momentum frame where the longitudinal momentum matches the entropy. Well, then the matrix string has a temperature which is just given by the square root of the oscillator level over the longitudinal momentum. On the other hand, we expect by the correspondence principle that that temperature is the Hawking temperature boosted to this frame, since a macroscopic string decays by emitting quanta at the Hagedorn temperature, which is 1 over L string, which is the Hawking temperature, because that's also 1 over the horizon size. So if we just compare those two numbers, we find that when the horizon size is of order the string scale, that the square root of the oscillator number and the number of bits in the string match, and that's just what one expects. Now we can understand this sort of Boltzmann character, if you like, of the collection of D particles that I was talking about before. The fact that the clusters are distinguishable is just the statement that we know where each D particle is by its position along the matrix string. Okay, so that in the matrix string language is just that there's some non-abelian background, which is the set of SUN twisted boundary conditions, which intertwines the various D particles as one circles the S1 that the 1 plus 1 Yang-Mills theory is living on. Okay. One more comment and then conclusions. So then now I take this description and I further boost it to much larger values of n. What happens is that the string temperature just boosts down by the appropriate factor. And so what's happening is that they're now n over s string bits in a thermal wavelength of the matrix string. And these are just the coherent clusters because the matrix string bits are correlated over a thermal wavelength. And their virial temperature, again, is indeed the boosted Hawking temperature. So there's a nice matching of the these two qualitative pictures of black hole entropy. So to summarize, one might say that black holes in matrix theory are stars composed of D particles. They're supported against collapse by the uncertainty principle because their wave function was essentially bounded by the uncertainty principle. And that we seem to recover all the appropriate scaling relations that we expect for a black hole size and entropy and energy. The characteristic size of the black hole is governed by the available energy and momentum resolution that these various clusters of D particles have when they interact with each other. Furthermore, the transverse density of the cluster centers never exceeds this holographic bound that was put forth by Tuft and Suskind. And finally, there's a kind of an interesting interplay between locality and non-locality in the theory. That is, individual D particles in the large N limit have wave functions which grow as n to the 1/9 and become infinitely big in the large N limit. Nevertheless, we're describing a black hole whose wave function is localized at the scale R0. And that's very similar to kinds of things that happen both in ADS space and in perturbative string theory. Thank you.
Questions? So the summary of the question is it possible to see a transition as you go from small, strong, weak coupling to strong coupling?
I haven't thought about it.
Other questions? Yes, go ahead.
What's the analog of the Ginsburg criterion for this mean field theory?
The question is, what is the analog of the Ginsburg criterion for this mean field theory?
No. One of the caveats, which perhaps I should have listed, is that first of all, matrix theory isn't really understood when the torus has too large a dimension, and that's basically because one can start to form more complicated bound states of the D particles, which realize things like five brains, and so the whole picture, I think, starts to break down because, as discussed by Samir Mathur in his talk, you start getting five-brain, anti-five-brain bound states presumably become relevant to understanding the entropy of low-dimensional black holes. And so, since those are not described in matrix theory, this picture is nice, but I wouldn't believe it for low dimensions, low being below 6.
Any other questions? Well, if not, let's thank Emil again.